Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Anoush.
And I'm Philippa.
And in this special series of the New Statesman podcast, we're looking at the politics of climate change and in the run-up to COP26, ask whether enough is being done to make a difference. So today we're looking at the lesson the UK can learn from other countries when it comes to changing the way we use energy in our homes, in particular the switch from gas to heat pumps to heat our homes. In 2019, the UK sold just 1.3 heat pumps to every 1,000 households. But at the other end of the scale, Norway sold 40 to every 1,000 and currently has 60% of homes warmed using heat pumps. So how can the UK catch up with that? We're delighted to be joined by Tony Tiller, the State Secretary at the Ministry of Petroleum and Energy in Norway, to tell us what he learned from that experience. Because at the moment, the UK is second only to Hungary at the bottom of the table when it comes to heat pumps. So thanks so much for joining us, Tony. And first of all, could you tell us sort of how Norway became such a leader in this technology? And was it a bumpy road to get there?
Thank you, Anish, for having me. I think there are several reasons why we have such a high penetration of heat pumps in Norway. I think, first of all, listeners in the UK need to know that the Norwegian energy sector, our power system, is almost entirely based on renewable hydroelectric power. So Norwegians are used to having electricity as their source for heating, unlike in the UK, where I understand historically you've been more dependent on gas for heating. So it makes very much economic sense in your household then to install a heat pump, because it saves you a lot of money, because they're much more efficient than, say, a traditional flat panel electric oven that you might have seen in houses. I can use myself and my own household as an example. I live in a detached house, quite new house, in fact. But after a couple of years, we decided that it made economic sense to invest in a heat pump, have it installed, and then it saves you money. And it's really comfortable as well, because you get a steady temperature. If you like it, 20 degrees Celsius in your house, and you can have it running at a very comfortable temperature around the clock.
Norway was obviously, to a certain extent, rather more advanced than the UK is in terms of electrification. There's quite a lot of pushback in the UK in terms of suggesting that big detached houses, or the fact that the UK's housing stock is quite old, make it more difficult to install heat pumps. And perhaps you could just talk us through a little bit more, explain the state of the housing in Norway and any particular challenges that you came up against.
We do have a high proportion of small detached houses in Norway. Out of roughly 2.5 million households, in fact, 1.3 million live in small houses. So percentage-wise, that's more than 50%, I guess. And half of those, again, have heat pumps. We see that almost 8 in 10 households own their own house or apartment. I think that's also probably a great incentive. If you own your own house, it makes sense. It is a big upfront investment. A good heat pump probably will cost you around £2,000 or so, at least, I think, here in Norway, maybe even more to have it installed. I can imagine that if you're a tenant, or flip it around, if you're the landlord, maybe it doesn't make sense for you economically, because the incentives are in the wrong place. So we are lucky then, in the sense that we have this housing structure, or this ownership structure in place.
That housing ownership structure doesn't sound so far away from what we have in the UK. Yet the installation of heat pumps has become, or is becoming, a bit of a political issue, couched in the whole aim to get to net zero and what the cost could potentially be for consumers. So there's always this figure, £10,000 to install an air source pump and more for the ground source kit, which appears in many newspapers as a way of sort of instilling fear in people about the costs of what it's going to take to reach net zero. I wonder if Norway had any of those political issues and how it overcame them.
No, I don't think it's ever been a very political issue. And I think that's coming back to what I said before, that listeners need to understand that Norway is a mountainous, wet coastal country. And anyone who's taken the coastal route maybe or visited are aware that we have a lot of rain and we have a lot of hydropower. So for historical reasons, we have had abundant energy and abundant electricity and probably, or I know, at lower prices than you do in the UK. Just as add on a bit of an anecdote, we are having a huge discussion here now because we just opened a new interconnector between Norway and the UK, which most likely will see electricity flow from Norway to the UK. And people here are concerned, are we now going to see UK prices for electricity in Norway? Because that sounds scary because prices are higher. But I would assume then that a high price of electricity, if you're going to use electricity as a direct source for heating, and you need to get there, I understand, if you are to phase out gas and reach your climate targets, then heat pumps sure makes sense. And it would be, I suppose, I heard £10,000. That sounded like a lot of money to me. But we actually haven't had in Norway any large-scale subsidy program or cash-in-hand program to buy heat pumps. Because coming back again to ownership structure, people living in detached houses, it's made economical sense for people actually to invest in a heat pump on their own. So there hasn't been a huge political issue or any subsidy element or so. I'm sorry, I can't give UK politicians a sort of like a recipe here because this has happened more or less organically and people acting on very selfish economic incentives, I think.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting what you said there because the figures are considerably higher in the UK and there clearly is this pushback from people. And I think a genuine concern as well as to how they can actually afford to insulate their home to make it more energy efficient and to install a heat pump. I also wanted to ask you, we've talked quite a lot there about privately owned housing, but have you done any work on social housing or how you encourage landlords to see an incentive in installing heat pumps as well?
Again, I think social housing, community housing is somewhat a smaller part of the whole market in Norway than my understanding is in the UK. There are a lot of co-ops and these larger buildings with lots of apartments are co-owned. And I don't think that they are probably the ones that are lagging behind in terms of the heat pumps. If you look at where the heat pumps are installed, it's predominantly in detached houses, predominantly in perhaps chained housing, you can picture the small house kind of stuff. And the larger housing systems, they probably still depend a lot on electricity. And historically, they have also depended on fossil fuel boilers. But in fact, that's one area where we have made political decisions. And back in 2015, we banned the installation of new fossil heating. And since 2020, last year, in fact, it's been against the law to use fossil oil to heat your building. So you have to go for bio oil or replace your fossil boiler with an electric boiler. And that we have subsidized.
And I think that's a really good point you're making there. There's a lot of discussion in Europe at the moment in terms of, do we actually need a date? So do we need to say by 2025, by 2030, that we actually need to phase out gas boilers. So there's a real incentive there for the market and to bring prices down. And this is one area where the UK government has suggested it will go for it, but then has stepped back a little bit. And is that something that you feel we need is a really key end date?
Now we're into the really big discussion. And what phrase should I use? It's not, is it a paradox? Is it a dilemma? We are blessed with a lot of hydropower. And as you said in your introduction, Anoush, we are quite a big exporter of oil and gas as well, as you may know. And these days with gas prices at the level we're now seeing, which are almost unprecedented, we are exporting all the gas that we can. And I believe we provide about 25% of the gas that we use in the UK. I know, Philippa, you were in Brussels. I was in Brussels before the weekend together with the minister. We had discussions with the EU. I heard the EU president, von der Leyen, praising Norway for trying to crank up gas production. This whole discussion, and we're talking about heat pumps today, but that's one element in this really huge transition that we need to go through. That's very difficult. And the Norwegian government, our main approach to this is we're committed to our climate targets. We're doing a lot to fulfill our national targets. And that it's a demand side thing in terms of the gas. So if you can do away with your gas and the demand will no longer be there, then no one will buy our gas. It's really quite that simple and quite that difficult. And I heard Mr. Johnson talking about renewables, and the problem with renewables is that the wind isn't always blowing. And then that's perhaps the biggest challenge to the UK energy sector, as I understand it.
In terms of the UK energy sector, there's been a lot of investment in wind and renewables, which is clearly great. But then, as you say, it's more the demand side, which now needs to change, which is obviously where the heat pumps and the electrification comes in, so that we're actually changing what people are demanding. They're not demanding gas, they're demanding electricity, which can then come from those sources and also help balance the system when, as you say, there is less wind blowing. And obviously interconnectors from countries like Norway as well will help balance the system and make sure that when there's less wind in the UK, there is electricity that can be brought in from elsewhere.
If you've been enjoying our podcast and want to find out more about what we think, and some of our colleagues too, then why not subscribe to The New Statesman? You can get 12 weeks for £12. Go to newstatesman.com/subscribe12. Touched on something in your last answer, Tony, about Boris Johnson. I just wondered what you think about the UK's place in Europe in terms of the wider transition that you mentioned. Boris Johnson was recently on the world stage saying it's easy being green. The Conservative Party in government at the moment prides itself on being one that's committed to a more sustainable future. How are they seen in the wider European sphere?
I think the UK is an incredibly important energy partner for Norway. We're neighbors, separated by a small bit of ocean, in fact. And as I mentioned before, we now have a first electric interconnector, or maybe it's a second. And we have these gas pipes that connect our countries. So we are very much integrated. We had your business secretary, energy sector, secretary, Mr. Kuerting, here earlier this year, emphasizing the need for more cooperation. And just a month or so ago, we signed a bilateral energy treaty a cooperation to set up a framework after Brexit. We really regard the UK as an important partner. And the North Sea, I think we need to reimagine the North Sea as a basin for energy. And you have, the UK have really been taking the lead on offshore wind. There are Norwegian companies such as Equinor, I know, that invested heavily in wind in the UK. And this is a little bit controversial in Norwegian politics. I mentioned before the difference in electricity prices and so on. But there is no doubt, the way that I see it anyway, that there are benefits to both countries here if we can be connected. I mean, the cooperation between hydropower, where you can store electricity as water in your reservoirs, combined with wind power has a lot of potential. But each country also have to look after their own interests. So this is sometimes politically sensitive. But I believe in the long run that the countries around the North Sea will become closer and closer integrated in terms of energy. I think so.
And Norway obviously had an election recently where climate was one of the subjects which was a big talking point, and also the role of oil and gas going forward in Norway's economy. With the new government coming in soon, you won't be part of that, but what do you see as the key steps now, both in terms of decarbonising, continuing to decarbonise Norway's economy, and also, as you say, how it works in that wider sphere of European relations and working with the UK and other countries?
You're right that climate was high on the agenda for voters this year, as we see across Western Europe. I think it's a very high priority and people are concerned about the future and the need to do more. I think it's also fair to say that there is a rather big consensus in the middle of Norwegian politics. We will now most likely have, or we will have, a Labour-led government. We've had a Conservative-led government up until now. But we do not really differ so much on these core issues of energy policy. I think as I mentioned before, on oil and gas, we will continue to be an exporter where there is demand. We will continue to place high HSE standards. We have a national carbon tax. We have the EU ETS, so we're really pricing carbon. We want to go into CCUS. We want to go into hydrogen. We want to go into offshore wind. All of this, I think, is most likely going to be continued under a new government. But the one thing that I see, as if there's any gray skies on the horizon, it is a bit of a discussion here in Norway now on how beneficial or not is this integration with other countries. And I mentioned that The UK cable has caused a lot of discussion here, and there are political parties who are voicing concern and saying, you know, we should keep the electricity here at home. We need it for our own industry. We should be exporting it. We risk importing UK prices. That's bad for consumers, bad for industries. So this is a bit of a battle between the people who believe that integrating building is a good thing and those who more regard it as a possible threat to our economy. So as you can understand, I'm in the first category, but we'll see how this develops.
And you mentioned that the Conservatives and the Labour parties in Norway are not that different in terms of climate policies. How important do you think it is to have cross-political or cross-party support for climate policies going forward?
It's hard to exaggerate, I think, because I think we all know that the energy transition is going to demand a lot of us. And I mean, even just introducing a carbon tax, like we did that more than 20 years ago, and you have duties on petrol and stuff in the UK as well. And a lot of this is really tough political decisions, and people, not all are going to like it. How do we make it socially just? I think it's incredibly important that you try to cross the aisle a little bit and agree on some principles, because if all climate policy devolves into sort of just like party politics, it probably doesn't bode well for the kind of broad consensus you need to get people on board on this. But I mean, yeah, it's going to be really tough, I think.
What lessons would you have then in terms of cross-party cooperation? Because we've just had our two main party leaders making digs at each other at their annual conferences. Do you have any lessons in cooperation?
I don't know. I mean, we take digs at each other here as well. That's politics, and it's also very difficult to compare. We're a smaller country with a smaller population. We are blessed with a very solid economy. It's probably easier for politicians here when you have perhaps more room in your budget to do these things. But I need to be diplomatic here. And I certainly hope that no matter what government you have in the UK and in Norway, I think both our countries probably benefit from close cooperation, also on energy.
I was just going to bring it back a little bit to our starting point of heat pumps. The UK government's working on its heat and building strategy at the moment. Obviously, it's the government, the UK's decision. But are there certain advice that you would give in terms of that strategy or certain ways you think are key steps for all countries perhaps now to move forward in terms of decarbonising heat, which is a really big issue given the amount of emissions that come from the building stock in Europe?
Yeah, it's a big question, Philippa. And yeah, it really isn't my place to give advice to the UK government, but I certainly see that you have a lot of fossil fuel in your heating sector. And it's pretty obvious then that you probably need to do away with some of that or a lot of that in order to reach your targets. And we have had a success story with heat pumps in this country. And I think one way or another, it has to make economic sense also for the consumer to make an investment. And how you make that happen is up to the UK government to find out. But it's a technology that has worked well for us. It's proven, it's tested, it's been very helpful. I think, in fact, that we consume 8 terawatts of electricity to produce 18 terawatts. So it's incredibly efficient once you get it in place. So I can understand that this is something that you're really looking into. And then we'll see what they come up with.
Thank you so much, Tony. It was great having you on, and thanks for giving us all of your advice and telling us about your experience.
Thank you for having me. Great.
And thank you to our co-host, Philippa Nuttall. It's been an interesting series. What more can we expect from our environment coverage in the New Statesman?
So in terms of the upcoming coverage of environmental and climate issues on the New Statesman, we'll obviously be focusing on COP26, the climate conference, which is being held in Glasgow, and looking at from a wider perspective in terms of what needs to happen in terms of financing climate action and what needs to happen politically now to make sure that we really step up to reduce emissions in line with the Paris Climate Agreement.
Brilliant. Thanks, Philippa. That sounds great. And you can find that all online and in the magazine. You've been listening to a special episode of the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoush Shakelian, and my colleague, Philippa Nuttall, Environment and Sustainability Editor at the New Statesman. Our music is Devil with the Devil, licensed under Creative Commons, and our producer is Adrian Bradley. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to subscribe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.